Raging bushfires in southern Australia forced thousands to flee. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The state of New South Wales has declared a week-long state of emergency, and in the neighbouring state of Victoria, authorities are preparing to evacuate some 4,000 people. Since September, 18 people have been killed and more than 1,200 homes destroyed across the two states. The BBC's Phil Mercer is there and explains the scale of the disruption.
This is right in the middle of the summer holidays, but seaside towns that should be buzzing with the delights of Christmas and New Year festivities are now places of great uncertainty, anxiety and unease. Adding to that sense of chaos, power cuts, mobile phone and internet networks are down, there have been petrol shortages, there's not enough food in certain places, and also some communities are cut off, so people either can't leave because of active fires or that the roads out are considered too dangerous. And there is an expectation that over the weekend that if people don't leave, many of those could find themselves in harm's way.
To give a sense of the scale of these fires, they've burned an area bigger than Belgium. Insurance claims have totaled at least $165 million since October. There will be a significant impact to the country's economy because of this.
It's safe to say there will be an enormous financial cost. There's also a great physical cost. Probably more importantly, there's been an immense emotional cost on this country. Many people are grieving. Many people feel traumatized. But there's also resilience and determination as well.
The BBC's Phil Mercer. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's the first day of 2020 trading, so let's do the numbers. Global shares are higher after President Trump earlier this week said the Phase 1 trade deal between the U.S. and China could be signed later this month. Shares of Airbus, meanwhile, are popping more than 3% after a report it took down Boeing as the world's biggest plane maker. It delivered 863 aircraft, reportedly, last year. Well, a new year has ushered in a new tax era for Google. The search giant vowed to end the use of the so-called double Irish Dutch sandwich. The tax loophole has been used by many U.S. companies, often big tech giants, and is estimated to have saved them hundreds of billions of dollars. The BBC's Philip Hampshire has more.
Ireland bowed to international pressure 5 years ago and agreed to close certain special tax statuses for big multinational companies. The most controversial of these was called the Double Irish Dutch Sandwich, which was popular with technology and pharmaceutical firms. By holding intellectual property in a firm in Ireland, US companies could claim they were being charged for the use of things like patents. Under the Double Irish, the company shifted the taxable income from the operating company in Ireland to another Irish-registered firm in an offshore tax haven via the Netherlands. All of this was perfectly legal, but irked governments who wanted the firms to pay more tax. Filings seen by Reuters showed that in 2018, Google moved $24.5 billion to Bermuda using this system. Although an end to the arrangements was announced in 2015, companies were given until 2020 to comply. I'm the BBC's Philip Hampshire for Marketplace.
Learning English is big business. 400 million people speak it as their first language, and a billion more know it as a second. No other language in history has been used by so many people or spanned a greater portion of the globe. The BBC's Manuela Zaragoza explores what's behind the rise of English.
If there's anyone who knows well how English has taken over the world, it's Melanie Butler. She's been the editor-in-chief of the English Language Gazette for the past 32 years.
It's now become, you know, a basic skill like reading, writing and arithmetic. Any international business will be done in English, but you might be having an Italian talking to an Arab talking to a Chinese.
Do you think native English speakers no longer really own their own language?
No, they don't own the language. No. And I think that what may be developing is a simplified version. One example I saw is that the EU Commission now accepts you saying trainings instead of training days.
What difference do you think the internet has made on this front?
The internet has had an enormous effect on the level of English of boys.
Why boys?
Because they're gamers. They play games online with other people, and the international language of that game will be English.
Yeah. Okay, jungle.
Well, that last point about gaming struck a nerve with our producer, Lawrence Knight. His 13-year-old son is a keen online gamer.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I find that one really hard. Oh, if I hit that shot, man, that would have been the clip.
So I was playing with someone from the Netherlands. I have some
German friends and a Portuguese friend. Most of them are quite good English. Most of them I can have like a conversation with.
The kind of English those boys are picking up is a classic example of what Jon Blumert calls cheap English. Jon is a professor of linguistic anthropology at the University of Tilburg in the Netherlands.
When we speak about English in the context of globalization, it's important to realize that it's like 100 varieties of English. And a number of them are what we could call expensive English, and others are cheap English. The standard English, for instance, is expensive in the sense that, as a rule, you only learn it through formal education, like schools or training programs and so on and so on. The cheap varieties have been spreading over the past decades through popular culture, music. They can basically be learned in the street. So what English has done in the context of globalization is a seemingly paradoxical movement in which, on the one hand, you see more homogeneity. We all use English now, but it goes hand in hand with exploding diversity. We use it in an incredible variety of environments and domains in relation to an incredible variety of identities. So English has not made the world more uniform. It has been a uniform instrument for more diversity in the world.
A mind-bending thought there for how English is changing the world. In London, I'm the BBC's Manuela Zaragoza for Marketplace.
Well, here's just one more flavor of the English language. In the BBC Business Unit, I'm the resident British to American English translator. So if you need the definition of knackered or want to know why we use the word gobsmacked, just ping me. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.